Welcome to the Countdown Podcast. Today we're going to review two things for you. One of them is, Paul,
is Kung Fu Panda 4.
Kung Fu Panda 4.
And then
I'll be doing The Gentleman, the TV show on Netflix.
Which, as you can tell immediately, the two things complement each other perfectly.
100% same tune. They absolutely.
Are absolutely playing with the same themes. They're not. Let's just start with Kung Fu Panda 4.
Hit me.
Which I was very fortunate this morning, as of time of recording.
This very morning.
To go to an advanced screening with thanks to Evie from Universal Pictures for the invite. Took my daughter along. Wayne had not much interest. Because it's an animated film and we know his aversion to these things unless they have spider or man in the title.
Sadly true.
Funnily enough, a panda not qualifying. This one is directed by Mike Mitchell. It's written by Jonathan Abel, Glenn Berger, Darren Lemke. It stars Jack Black, Awkwafina, two of my favorites already, Bryan Cranston, James Hong, Ian McShane, Ki-Hui Kwan.
Oh, really?
Dustin Hoffman and Viola Davis. It's 94 Shit. Minutes long. Yeah, quite the cast. $85 million budget, which surprised me, I have to say, because the best thing about this whole film is it looks fucking magnificent.
Hmm.
And the box office thus far is $117 million. Doesn't open here till March 28th, but opened in the States on March 8th. So we are sort of 9 days in, it's taking $117 million around the world. But for whatever strange reason, I think it's called school holidays. This one's been delayed in Australia until basically Good Friday.
Okay.
Which is when the school holidays start. All right, Wayne, what is it about?
Okay, apparently Po must train a new warrior when he's chosen to become the spiritual leader of the Valley of Peace. However, when a powerful shape-shifting sorceress sets her eyes on his staff of wisdom, that's not his dick, right?
You're exactly where you're going to go with that.
He suddenly realizes he's going to need some help, and he starts teaming up with a quick-witted Corsac fox. Po is like the panda, yeah?
Yeah, okay, Jack Black.
Jack Black. He soon discovers that heroes can be found in the most unexpected places.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment. Already mentioned the box office takings, but in terms of a critical response, this one has 71% of 113 critics' reviews are positive on Rotten Tomatoes with an average rating of 6 out of 10.
Hmm.
On Metacritic, always harsher. This has 56 out of 100 based on 30 critics indicating mixed or average reviews.
Hmm.
And audiences polled by CinemaScore, I have to assume most of them are children. A negative on the A plus to F scale when they leave the cinema.
All right.
All right then. So with all that, and look, I'll be light for spoilers because it hasn't come out here in Australia. Mm. And I know Wayne really wants... No, he doesn't. As we have already established, Kung Fu Panda 4 is solid.
Solid?
Solid. Yeah, it's not brilliant. It's not going to change your life in terms of animated feature films. But it's more of the same, though. It makes some questionable decisions, I think. And I'm not a huge fan of the franchise, I want to be honest here.
Mm.
Both daughter and I were sitting there going, what happened in the third one? Do you remember?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, because I actually didn't know they had gone up to 4. I remember the first one.
Yeah, for
I
sure.
I remember the Angelina Jolie, the tigress, tiger, whatever.
And Ian McShane was a bad guy in whichever one it was, 2, 3.
Okay, and I remember quite liking the first one.
And he had a bunch of sort of other warriors, like there was a snake and a...
Yes.
And grasshopper and the whatever. And they've just all been taken out of the picture in this one. They've been completely sidelined. They're on other missions.
Okay.
Which they explain away. And I think that might have upset a few of the... fans of the series, based on some of the reviews I was reading on Letterboxd.
They wanted them back. All right.
It's not just about Poe. There's other characters that people really like. But look, it looks really good. Director Mike Mitchell here and the cinematographer Joshua Gunther. I know it's an animated film, but the camera almost never stops moving in this movie.
Oh, really?
It's zooming in, it's zooming out, swirling around, it's going in between bits and pieces, you know, whirling around to give different angles from different sort of kung fu moves.
That's really wicked.
During the action sequences, I was really impressed. If not for the visually stunning nature of this film, and for $85 million, I think it really has done exceptionally well. Mm. They have really done exceptionally well. This would be probably not passing, but that elevates it into a pass grade for sure. Because the story is as rote as they come.
Is it?
It's 100% predictable. I know it's a kid's film. You can't knock it too much for that. But even my daughter's like, it was kind of okay. I liked it, but I didn't love it, she was saying.
The thing I liked about the first one was that Jack Black was, in fact, funny as a fat panda. Is he more skilled in this one?
Oh, yeah. This is the thing.
So he's a master now.
He's a master now. He's literally kicking ass and taking names in his first scene on screen, and everyone loves him. So we're now evolving to him becoming a reluctant master. He doesn't want to pass on the mantle of the Dragon Warrior, but he kind of has to, and he needs to pick a protege or a student to train, much as he was trained.
Mm.
And, of course, it's the person, Awkwafina's character, who's a fox that he winds up with, and gradually over time he sees her as his natural heir, if you will, or the next Dragon Warrior.
Okay.
And the film goes from there.
Okay.
it makes some interesting choices in terms of the villain of the piece, who is a chameleon who can become whatever she wants to, and even though she looked like them, doesn't mean that she can have their powers. You know, she just looks like them. So she takes the form of Ian McShane's snow leopard or tiger or whatever it is from whichever film it is, second or third one, but just scares people because she can't actually fight the way he is. And so her whole plan is, I need to open a doorway to the spirit realm, the great beyond, draw all these deceased masters and suck their power out of them with whatever spell that she's got going.
Okay, that's a bit more like hocus pocus than I was expecting.
Yeah, which, you know, it's all mysticism and the like mixed through this whole series. It's all fate and destiny and all these kind of themes. But it's very convenient the way this film all plays out. And like I said, you'll know exactly what's going to happen and when it's going to happen. So therefore, you're resting on the visuals, you're resting on the voice performances, and you're resting on the jokes.
And what did your daughter think of it?
My daughter said it was mildly funny and she liked it enough, but I could tell this is not a film that she's going to come back to watch again and again. So whereas she is chafing at the bit for Inside Out 2, for example.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So that's more...
Is this more of a boys' film?
I don't think so, because you got Awkwafina here as the secondary main character, and the villain's a woman as well, or a female chameleon as well. So
okay.
I certainly distributed out there. There is a sort of byline with Bryan Cranston as his clearly biological father and then James Hong as his adopted father, which I think plays out in the second and third films.
Okay.
And they are following along trying to catch up, and it doesn't add a lot. Mm. They're not that funny. Those characters, probably a poor decision, I think, to have them as the B plot of the film versus maybe these previous heroes that people seem to really like.
Okay.
And I think the comedy, as I mentioned before, is just okay. It's barely okay. I chuckled 2-3 times. Like, they literally, there's a gag in there where they are playing on the bull in a china shop.
Okay.
Which just goes straight over my daughter's head, but I had a chuckle, you know, because she's too young to understand that saying or ever heard of it before. But there's a fart gag in there.
Oh, well, that's something, Paul.
Daughter laughed at a lot, so that's the funniest bit in the movie.
Because farts are hilarious and we all know it.
We all know it.
Exactly. All right. And so your ultimate assessment?
And then, if I can just say, please, the performances, you know, you got Jack Black. I guess you have to make him sing at some point. So, of course, he sings the end credit song.
Oh.
You know, trying to emulate the whole Super Mario Brothers Peaches bit.
I wish I could remember that.
But I have to say, it's really, really are shoehorning this in here.
Okay.
And Jack, like, he's very talented. I just don't understand why Awkwafina keeps getting roles like this. I don't think she's a great actor, full stop. She might be a very funny person. I just don't think she's a very good voice actor.
Yeah, she does get a lot of gigs.
She absolutely does. And it's just, she's fine.
I think you want to put some Asian folks in a...
Oh, we got James Hong.
There's one.
That's it.
He's not even lead. No. I think that, okay. All right. Yeah, fair enough.
So overall, look, this film... For a school holiday fair, which you go watch with your children and not be offended by what's going on, at least I was visually struck by how good some of these shots are. That's probably enough to get you through. So I'm going to give this one a 57.
57.
Yeah. So 3 stars. Low 3 stars.
It's probably fine for you. It's probably fine.
Yeah. But let's not be clear. Let's not mix this up. I love animated films, and when they're done well, I will go to the nth degree. Witness Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse from last year. But at the same time, this is nowhere near as bad. This is right in the middle.
Yeah,
that's what I'm saying. It's a low 3 stars.
It's fine.
It's fine. And I would recommend it to anyone who's got kids and who's enjoyed the film series up to this point. Go see it. Why not? Inoffensive, 94 minutes. It'll cruise by.
94 minutes. Those are long gone days for most of these things.
Because it's $85 million budget. Too expensive to make animated films longer than that.
2 hours. Yeah, exactly. Okay, nice one. Alrighty.
Right, so we're going to segue now onto The Gentlemen.
Gentlemen.
Which is a weird byproduct. I had no idea this was coming.
Neither did I.
In fact, you had even less idea than I, because I was 2 or 3 episodes in before you went, hey, The Gentleman, what's this?
I only know because when Dave, like one of our listeners, is like, yo, I'm checking this out. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Because I love The Gentleman movie. Like, that was the shit.
It's very richly described on Wikipedia as an action comedy television show. It's not action. There's barely any action in this film. Whatsoever. Certainly not by halfway through it, which is where I'm up to it.
Yeah.
It is it's probably a crime comedy.
It's a caper.
Caper.
Right, sort of, yeah,
sort of thing. It's a spin-off of Guy Ritchie's 2019 film with the same name and is created by Guy Ritchie, who directs quite a few of the episodes. Wrote most of them, for what I've seen, at least up to halfway through. Story by he and Matthew Reed. It stars Theo James, Kaya Scolderio.
Scodilaro.
There you go. Thank you. Daniel Ings, Jolie Richardson, Vinnie Jones, Giancarlo Esposito, and Ray fucking Winston.
Ray fucking
absolutely
Winston.
Doing the fucking Winston proud in this particular film.
Totes.
8 episodes from one season thus far, released on March 7th, 2024. And Wayne, what is The Gentleman about?
Okay, so this Theo James guy plays the Duke of Halstead named Eddie Horniman. He's a dashing fellow who is the estranged son of an English aristocrat. He's also an ex or a soldier, and he finds himself embroiled in a world of criminality, specifically with career criminal Bobby Glass, that's the Ray Winston characters.
Ray fucking Winston.
Industrial cannabis empire on the east end of London. Now, I thought, because of the movie, obviously Matthew McConaughey is the kingpin of the weed empire who uses all of these toffs.
Yes, rich estates.
Rich estates to go underground and cultivate multiple weed farms. And obviously this was that. This was like kind of the story of one of those lords. But Matthew McConaughey is not the kingpin anymore.
Right. So
it's a spiritual...
Yeah, well, it's a spin-off.
Yeah.
As it's described it, so...
Yeah.
I just want to say here, critical reception, 71% approval rating on Rotten Tomatoes according to 45 critics. Mm-hmm. On Metacritic, 67 out of 100 based on 23 critics, indicating generally favorable reviews.
I would agree. This is a this lead guy, I've seen him many times before.
Yep.
Theo James.
He's good. He's well cast.
Yeah, he's actually quite a dashing young fellow.
He's a very good looking man.
But also he's a little James Bondy, the way he drops his lines here and there, you know. So I often said if I was English, I'd like to be like an Oxford English guy who could wear those like cool white shirts. Anyway.
Cool white shirts.
Yeah, just like a white...
Narrow down for us, Wayne.
Oh, a button-down dress. It's actually called an Oxford. It's called a cotton Oxford. But like, yeah, it's this very... slim Englishmen can do it really well. Fat people less so. So...
I'll give you a quick run back about Theo James's...
Yeah, yeah, tell me.
Filmography, The Inbetweeners movie, Underworld: Awakening.
Was he in fucking The Divergent? Inbetweeners?
Yeah, he was, apparently. Underworld: Blood Wars. reprising his role from Underworld: Awakening. Okay. How It Ends, which was a terrible Netflix film from 6 years ago, which watched. Not much else here, really. The Witcher, Nightmare of the Wolf, he was Vesemir's voice in that. And then he's been in a fair bit of television. So I think he's 39 years old. He's obviously got a career ahead of him, but he's not really been anything big and massive.
I think The White Lotus is well known. Yeah.
Lotus on TV. Yes, he is. He's in that main role in season 2.
Yeah. So, I mean, but again, there you go. I didn't even know he was in the bloody Inbetweeners. So I've clearly seen him around the traps. I'm actually kind of glad he got a lead, this kind of lead, because he does really well here. I actually think that the show is really, it's really nicely shot because it is... As you said, Guy Ritchie, I think, directed the first 3 episodes. And the guy and all of the directors that pinch hit for him later on, you don't notice a difference in style. In fact, it is definitely consistent. A house style, yeah.
Well, he's a creator, and I think he's obviously the lead consultant on the show, Guy Ritchie, so he would have put his stamp all over even the episodes he didn't direct.
Yes, and it benefits so much from it, because each episode seems to take a different perspective per character while still moving the whole story along. One of my favorite things about it is that the cold open is...
Sets the tone of that episode.
Sets the tone. And that usually follows someone who's not one of the leads, right? And then the thing that they say is the title of the episode, kind of. And it's that whole, you know, it's just like a black screen with smoke and The Gentleman created by Guy Ritchie. And then the title is something weird like, you know, Not Without Danger. And I just like all that shit.
Yeah, I probably should specify here. Wayne's seen the whole series. He watched the whole thing in a week, which is hilarious from a bloke who can't watch 10 films in fucking 10 weeks. But anyway.
It's a ringing endorsement because I kept on watching it.
You are a big Guy Ritchie fan. I think you're an apologist even for his shit films. Like, you know.
I'm not. Actually, no. So here's the thing. I think Guy Ritchie is the most hit and miss of hit and missing them in land. He's like, he'll do. Like, The Gentleman is his last return to form. What did he do lately? He did the Operation Fortune, right?
Rouge de Guerre.
Shit now, film. Look, that was...
You an apologist for that?
Yeah, I actually didn't mind it.
I haven't watched The Covenant yet, but that's the film before...
Actually, that's a good film. I think that's a good film. But it's nothing like this.
And then we've got the Ungentlemanly Warfare, whatever.
I'm fucking jacking off.
I don't understand how he made this. This guy drops a film every year virtually, and somehow he's had time to go and do this film, this series as well.
Yeah, he's probably got excellent producers with him as well. So, I mean, but that's why... But then he'll go do Wrath of Ass and fucking Revolver and
Well, Revolver
shit like
was a long time ago. Wrath of Man is a far better film than...
piece of shit.
Whatever, the Charlie Hunnam fucking...
Oh, King Arthur?
King Arthur film.
I like that way that better than fucking Rocket sucks. Man. Oh, my God. See, it's contentious between us, you see. So, but what I do think is great about this is that he's using all of his Guy Ritchie-isms to go, no, no. Because when Guy Ritchie is being Guy Ritchie, like you know, fucking all his lock, stock type of thing, that's the best Guy Ritchie, right? He should only do that, but he's obviously very fucking, you know.
Yeah, whereas I've only seen, I think I'm 4.5, maybe 5 episodes in.
Well, you will have seen that sometimes when characters are talking about something, there will be on-screen prompts where they kind of write it down.
Yeah, absolutely. Seen that device
very,
quite a few
very,
times.
Very, very cool. I like that so much.
I'm going to let you take the stage here in a second. I know I'm interjecting because I've seen a little bit of it at least. The thing which annoys me the most about this show is when they do this ridiculous cut away from action that's about to happen and then have the person describe what happens with shit editing.
Okay.
Really fucking annoys me.
I will tell.
And it's become an absolute thing by halfway through. It's like, here we go. Oh.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to take that point and say to you, it doesn't stop.
Yep.
That is clearly
It's a cheap way of getting around a budget
it is.
Concern.
It is. And he has, I didn't really necessarily notice it until now that you're saying it, but like he's made it a drama and he's cutting around the action, or he's putting in points where the action is about to build and it doesn't go off, right? Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a real ding on the series, I have to be honest. It really induces my enjoyment.
If he had probably done and showed all of the stuff, it would have been a better show.
Yep. Oh, good. I'm glad he said that's fine. That's my big criticism.
Yeah, but I will say to you that I didn't bump into it because I really wanted to know what happened next. And when you cut to after the battle,
You know immediately.
Yeah.
We know who's lived. We know who survived. We know who hasn't.
That's right. And that's stupid. Why... Yeah, okay. I get that. Now... With the lead female, okay?
Yep.
I was sitting there because I had forgot about this. I didn't know.
She's from Crawl.
Yeah. I was like, how come I'm digging her so much?
Oh, well.
And then I'm like, oh, it's that chick from the fucking Crocodile movie.
Yeah. Also, she's female.
And, well, actually, she's a female Ranga, but she isn't in this
one. Well, she's also English, which I did not know from her time in Crawl.
That I did not know. And once again, I'm impressed at these English folks who can play Americans so incredibly well. I think that ultimately it is it's a good show. Actually, I just think it's a kind of a great show because I didn't stop watching it.
Great show. Well, that is an endorsement that you got through 8 episodes in the time we discussed what we were going to do today for the review, which was basically 7 days ago.
Yeah. And because it's all on the strength of that lead, I would say. Those two are good together. Ray Winston obviously is ducking in and out. Hey?
No.
No?
No, no. You can't say it that way.
What do you mean?
Ray fucking Winston.
Oh, Ray fucking Winston.
Thank you.
Is he's doing what he wants. What I'm trying to figure out though is like this is the reason that I kind of like the only thing I bumped into was before the show even started, because I thought that this was going to be the manner of one of Matthew McConaughey's thing and you just never meet Matthew McConaughey.
Well, to be honest, you've just not spoiled it for me because that's fine. But I was hoping that maybe there'd be a bit of a cameo on the set last or second last episode of Matthew McConaughey tying it into...
Damn it, now so do I.
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. Mm. No, but here's what it seems to be is that Matthew McConaughey must have eventually sold that business to Ray Winston. No, actually, because Ray Winston is talked about as having been in it for a long time. So this has kind of nothing to do with it.
No.
It's just a similar kind of
plot.
That's
the one spoiler we're going to give away.
Sorry.
Now I'm going to hit the button for you, Wayne, so you can just spoil it. But don't spoil it for me.
No, I'm not going to spoil it.
Or I'll take the headphones off.
You don't have to do it because I'm not going to spoil anything. Okay. I'm going to tell you then is that I am definitely looking forward to a second season. If they do it, right? And
I don't think they will. Very surprised if this does well enough to get a second season.
Really?
Yeah. I just don't. I think it caters to you and I's taste.
You think there's only a few of us around?
Yeah. And the poor return on most Guy Ritchie films since Aladdin would... I attest to the fact that we are in the minority, not the majority.
I would, because I reckon it's a nice cheap show to shoot because of all of his no action scenes. And maybe that's how he got past the first season. Maybe it's like, this is how he shot it so quick. You know what I mean? Like he didn't have so many second unit directors.
Netflix are notorious for giving 2-season contracts with an option for the second season and then paying people the same. It almost never goes beyond a second season because then the asking price goes up if it's got a lot of eyes across it.
Yeah, yeah. And that's what I would... I guess what I'm hoping for is that he's like, okay, well, you get the second season, but now you get a bigger bump, so now you can show your action scenes. You know,
I'd be surprised if I put more money into a second season, but anyway.
Yeah.
It's possible.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think that the brother character in this show...
infuriatingly annoying.
...is like,
and meant to be.
I know. He's actually really good, that actor, because I hate him.
You're absolutely correct. He is very good in the role. I think maybe this becomes apparent in the second half of the season, but a weakness in the show is it doesn't do enough to explain why Eddie is prepared to go so far to save his brother. Like, they don't seem that close. They've never seen that close. His brother's an asshole, fuckwit, fuck up. And Eddie constantly will put his life on the line to try. Why? I think their connection's not well enough established.
Yeah, you might say that. Eddie's a, I mean, they do sort of explore it, but Eddie's a, I think the idea here is Eddie's
he's a noble, good bloke.
He's a good guy.
He's
yeah.
a good bloke, but I don't think that's enough. For
well,
me,
that's
personally.
That's one thing. Like, the idea behind the show is that you're seeing this nobleman, essentially, you know, sort of like, kind of, he's trying to get away from the life of crime, but it keeps pulling him in, and that's sort of an interesting dynamic to see where it ends up. So, won't spoil that for you, but ultimately, this show is enjoyable enough to me that I don't know that I'd watch it again. It's not that type of thing.
No, it's nothing. Right? There's no repeat viewing.
No, but it's. I had a good time while I was there, so I'm going to give it a solid 69.
Okay, yeah, I'm not going to give a score because I'm only halfway through it. So. Fair enough, 69. I think that's a recommendation for anyone who's into crime, caper, laughs, a la the Guy Ritchie kind of laughs where ridiculous circumstances and character moments.
Yeah, it's shot well enough to entertain you, put it that way. So.
There's certainly some early Guy Ritchie-isms in here, the camera which is strapped to the actor who's walking along and sort of shaking.
That's why I'm watching this. I'll watch that shit all day long. So, you know.
All right, there you are. Couple of very short reviews, but Kung Fu Panda 4, very qualified recommendation if you've got kids/are into the series. And The Gentleman, a recommendation from Wayne, though not one to blow up your skirt and get you really excited.
Like, you don't expect way too much, but I do recommend you give it a try.
Okay, that's it from us this week then. If you have seen The Gentleman and or Kung Fu Panda 4, want to let us know what you think, please do via email thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com on X at @thecountdownpc. More importantly, join the Facebook listening community because that's where we interact with the good folk, the wonderful listeners of the show, and you get in discussions with them there. And thecountdownpodcast.com for all links to everything else, including the Patreon and the extra exclusive special content that we put up there.
Damn right.
Thank you so much for joining us today. My name is Paul.
My name's Wayne.
And this has been the soundboard criminally underused. Just because it's gangstery. We'll catch you next time. See ya. Couldn't even bring yourself to say it.